I call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 3:23 p.m. on Wednesday, February 16th, 2022. Members present are Representative McCarty, Snyder, Co-Chair Fields, and myself, Rep. Sponholz. Welcome, Representative Kaufman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks so much to our Secretary, Leah Frazier, who's joining us actually in the room here, and our LIO moderator, Leah Steedel. A reminder to everybody to announce yourself before speaking for those that are listening online and to turn your cell phones off for the duration of the meeting if you haven't already done so. We have two items on our agenda today. The first is a hearing for Senate Joint Resolution 15, recognizing the Alaska-Canadian relationship with invited testimony, and a second hearing for Senate Bill 9, the Title IV rewrite, including public testimony. Let the record reflect that Representative Nelson joined us at 3:24 p.m. To start, we're going to have a first hearing of a Senate Joint Resolution 15, recognizing the Alaska-Canadian relationship. Senator Begich and staff Trevor Bailey, please begin your introduction of your resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You were faster than our feet on that one, so we appreciate that. I'm Senator Tom Begich from District J. I'm beginning to feel this is my new committee, so I appreciate that. With me is Trevor Bailey, who is one of my staff assistants. Thank you for taking the moment to the time to listen to SJR 15, which relates to the Alaska-Canada relationship. And I just want to say that this came from a series of discussions that began some years ago with then counsel Brandon Lee, and has emerged over time. Recently, I was selected to be the co-chair of the CSG, which is the Council for State Governments Canada-American Relations Committee, working with a Canadian counterpart from Alberta. And in that, we talked about the part of the committee talks about our unique relationship specifically between the two nations, but I drilled down during those discussions about the unique relationship that we have with Alaska. Much of that discussion is embedded in this resolution. You have the resolution before you, and I hope that you'll take the time to actually go through it in detail and read the resolution. We did suggest a couple minor changes. Brandon Lee is no longer the Consul General. The new Consul General is online to be a witness. I'm going to ask Trevor to read to you, if you will, the sponsor statement, and then we'll be open for questions. But I just want to just reaffirm the strong connections we have with Canada. I recently had the wherewithal to sign a letter from one of your members, Representative McCarty, reinforcing some of our common needs of transportation around food, safety, and things like that. We have this relationship that exists between us. We found a way to accommodate during the heart of the COVID pandemic our need to come back for those of us who live in South Central or Interior Alaska to go through Canada. We've built this relationship, and so I look forward to your swift consideration of this resolution. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Trevor Bailey to read the sponsor statement.
All right. And before Mr. Bailey does that, I just want to recognize that Representative Shragi joined us at 3:25 p.m. And welcome back, Mr. Bailey. Why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Trevor Bailey, staff to Senator Begich, and I will begin reading the sponsor statement. Senate Joint Resolution 15 honors the relationship shared between Canada and Alaska. Canada and the United States share the world's longest border, 5,522 miles, 1,538 of which is shared with just Alaska, the Yukon Territory, and the province of British Columbia. Canada and Alaska are both rich in our natural beauty, abundant natural resources, indigenous peoples and cultures, history, and government ties. We share a border, airspace, and environment. Together, we defend North America against external threats. Our people share families, friends, jobs, and one of the most successful international relationships in the modern world. We move goods and transport people between our border regularly. Our cruise and tourism industries are dependent on each other's. The Northwest Passage is our shared gateway to the Arctic. Together, we have built a long-standing collaborations on economic opportunities, health, education, energy, security, environmental protections, infrastructure, and public safety issues. We have worked to advance and sustain health and resiliency of the Arctic and northern peoples and communities by strengthening economic, cultural, and family connections across the region. Trade between our countries totals over $1.3 billion across multiple industries and contributes nearly 11,000 jobs between us, allowing more than 50 Canadian-owned companies to operate in Alaska. Our interdependent communities are uniquely intertwined. As a perfect example of this is Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson with its American commander and Canadian deputy commander. Together, Canada and Alaska create better lives for our respective residents and citizens. This should be formally recognized. I look forward to continued cooperation, friendship, trade, tourism, culture, and exchange, and goodwill between us.
And Mr. and Madam Chair, thanks to Trevor, Tom Begich again for the record. We do have Council General Mia Yen, who's based in Seattle online, and also the local consul, Karen Mathias, who's our honorary consul for Canada and who resides in Anchorage. She's also online.
All right. Wonderful. And we're going to start going to Mia Yen, Council General for Canada, who is not in Alaska. Ms. Yen? Can you introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Good afternoon, Mia Yen, Consul General of Canada for the Pacific Northwest and Alaska, based in Seattle. Good afternoon. My name is Mia Yen, and as I mentioned earlier, my name is, and I'm Canada's Consul General to the Pacific Northwest and to Alaska. I would like to thank Minority Leader Begich for sponsoring this resolution. And I would also like to thank co-chairs Fields and Sponholz and the members of the Labor and Commerce Committee for allowing me to testify in support of Senate Joint Resolution 15, which recognizes the unique relationship between Canada and Alaska. I would also like to acknowledge Canada's honorary consul to Alaska, Karen Mathias. She has been a key link to maintaining the strong relationship between Canada and the last frontier. A bit about myself. I was born and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia, and have had the good fortune to travel to Alaska about half a dozen times, as well as visited all three of Canada's northern territories. Now, as part of my job as Consul General of Canada to Alaska, I will be traveling to your great state. And prior to starting in my position about 4 months ago, I traveled not only to Juneau and Anchorage, but also to Ketchikan, Skagway, Sitka, Seward, Valdez, Homer, Fairbanks, and Denali National Park. I will be traveling to both Juneau and Anchorage next month, and again to Anchorage for the Arctic Encounter Symposium in April. Ambassador Hillman from Washington will also be attending the conference. Canada and Alaska have a lot in common. We produce energy responsibly, and we enjoy our rugged outdoor spaces. We share a common culture. In the north especially, we know how to deal with long winters and short summers, and personal connections run deep. Taking a broader view, Canada and the United States are bound together by our history, our values, our economy, and our environment. No two nations depend more on each other for their mutual security and prosperity. We are friends, allies, and partners. Economically, Canada is America's biggest customer by far, buying more from the U.S. than China, Japan, and the U.K. combined, and our economic relationship supports millions of well-paying jobs spread across every congressional district throughout the United States. And in 2020, at the height of the pandemic, Canada and Alaska still traded almost $1.4 billion in goods and services, supporting thousands of jobs on both sides of the border. There are almost 60 Canadian-owned companies in the state, including Tech Resources, Alaska Commercial Company, and Icicle Seafoods. Now, these 60 companies account for nearly 4,500 Alaskan jobs and contribute $265 million in salaries alone. They are major contributors to Alaska's economy. Our two countries with Mexico also work to ensure that North America will remain the most competitive region in the world by negotiating the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. The USMCA reaffirms that we don't just sell things to each other, we make things together. Canada and the U.S. are also steadfast allies in defense, working together to protect our homelands, while partnering on global peace and security. As was mentioned earlier, the best example of this on our continent is NORAD. And of course, you'll all be familiar with the Alaskan regional base at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. Now, Canada's premier partner in the Arctic is the U.S., and our cooperation is longstanding on a wide range of issues, including Arctic science, search and rescue, continental shelf delineation, security, and of course, people-to-people connections. And of course, Alaska Natives share family and traditional lands with Canadian Indigenous long before there were borders. Finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention our joint challenges and cooperation in managing the pandemic. I know that rules around cruise ships and the recent vaccine requirement for truckers have caused concern and anxiety in both of our countries. I'm sure that you are aware that the issue of border measures is at the center of a lively public debate now in Canada, touching both on land and sea transport regulations. I understand that a letter from Alaskan state legislators was sent to Prime Minister Trudeau on the implications of the vaccination requirement for truckers entering Canada. These health measures bring the trucking industry regulations into conformity with domestic and United States government regulations. And these measures will further strengthen Canada's impressive record of vaccination and low rates of COVID hospitalization and death. Views of Alaskan legislators are being taken very seriously in Ottawa. And just yesterday, the Government of Canada announced a series of adjustments to the current border measures, representing the beginning of a phased easing of travel restrictions. And I should also note that the blockage of the Canada-US border along the lower 48 by demonstrators have been lifted, and the federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act to give new tools to the police and other authorities to roll back and prevent lingering blockages. Despite these challenges, our two countries have worked together to ensure the safety and security of our citizens while maintaining the flow of essential goods and workers. For example, at the beginning of the pandemic, my consulate team in Seattle facilitated the transit of many legislators through Canada on their way home from the capital. And when a ferry broke down in Juneau last summer, our agencies worked together to ensure that Kennecott's passengers could make it safely through the Haines border crossing to their destinations. Canada and Alaska also worked to provide accommodations for the residents of Hyder, Alaska and Stewart, British Columbia, remote communities and uniquely dependent on each other for the necessities of life. I can't thank the state of Alaska enough for providing vaccines to residents of Stewart at a clinic in Hyder. This is yet another example of goodwill between close neighbors. I thank the state for its generosity and partnership. Thank you for your time and consideration of this resolution.
All right. Thank you very much for that, those thoughtful remarks, Ms. Yan. And we certainly do have a robust and close relationship with Canada, particularly here in Alaska. As you say, many of us in the legislature visit your country every single year, sometimes twice in a year, as we make our way back. And we look forward to meeting you in person when you come to Juneau next month. Are there any questions for Ms. Yan before we move on? Do you want to make a comment, Ms. Representative McCarty?
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Chung, this is marvelous. Thank you for the comments. I am very endeared to Canada as many things. My father went to college in Alberta Prairie School, and he had a scarf that he wore at that college that sits next to my desk here at the Capitol in Juneau, and he passed away just in August. So thank you for Canada for that. And also I was involved with a camp at Keats Island, just above Vancouver. You may know of that, and have many friends there that are involved in many things in the industry of Canada. So as the strong ties, at least for this representative, this Alaskan, but many Alaskans with our friends and family of Canada, that it's not just a trite relationship, but a very deep relationship that we have together.
All right, thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair to Councilor Yen, I do appreciate you coming and speaking with us. As one, and I'm glad you talked on the joint operations at a Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. I know I've had the chance to participate in a few of them, and those Canadian soldiers are definitely worth their might. I hope that you would be able to expand a little bit more on some of the cruise ships over on the western side of Canada. I know that the United States had some problems with that, and I was hoping that maybe you could paint a roadmap of where that's going to be looking like for the next few years.
Did you hear the question?
I did. Well, right now, as I mentioned earlier, these issues are being discussed within Ottawa. And plans are, I can assure you that this is being discussed. I'm, in fact, planning on having a discussion with Transport Canada tomorrow to try and better understand what their plans are. As I mentioned earlier, the government actually issued measures to lighten border restrictions. So my office can send along a copy of the news release that was sent out. And these restrictions are going to take place at the end of the month, so at the end of February. Related to cruise ships, that is being discussed, I know, in Cabinet. And there is a lively debate on that issue. There's not much I can share at this time, but I can assure you that they are being reviewed on an urgent basis back in Ottawa.
Ms. Yan, if you can forward that press release to Senator Begich's office, and we'll be sure to distribute it to the entire committee. Do you have anything further to add?
No, that's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. We really appreciate you being here. Next up, we're going to go to Karen Mathias, who's well known to many of us here in the legislature for other work that she does, but she's also the Honorary Consul of Canada in Alaska. Ms. Mathias.
Thank you very much to the chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Mathias. I'm the Honorary Consul of Canada based in Anchorage. I was born and raised in British Columbia before becoming a Canadian Foreign Service officer. After assignments in Ottawa and Europe, I had the opportunity to open Canada's first consulate in Alaska in 2004. I felt very fortunate to work in a state that has so many important issues for Canada, from energy and the environment to Arctic governance, as well as border management and the defense relationship through NORAD. These areas and others have been covered in the resolution itself and also in Consul General Yen's remarks just now. I was asked today to speak about the people-to-people connections, which has always been the best part of my work here. So many Alaskans have connections to Canada through family, work, or travel, and the most enduring of these connections has been between Indigenous said. From Metlakatla to Kaktovik, I've heard many stories of family connections and treasured places in Canada. Given our shared climate and geography, we have much to learn from each other. One of the first visits I worked on was by the Premier of the Northwest Territories. He came with a group of Indigenous business people who were interested in learning more about ANCSA and the Alaska Native Corporations. More recently, there was a visit before the pandemic by the Canadian Minister of Health, and she came to meet with the South Central Foundation in order to learn more about the NUCA System of Care program, thinking that it might be a model for Canada. In my capacity as consul and honorary consul, I've been privileged to be part of many cross-border events like the Yukon Quest and the Klondike Road Relay from Skagway to Whitehorse. We even share Olympic athletes like Keegan Messing and also many hockey players and cross-country skiers. I've also visited the Shared Border Post building on the top of the World Highway between Chicken and Dawson. It's a great example of Canada-US federal cooperation in a very isolated place. Canadian visitors always tell me how welcoming Alaskans have been to them and how much they feel like home in Alaska. I'm not the first Canadian to marry an Alaskan and decide to make my home here. My husband and I actually named our son Elias, mostly because we just liked the name, but also because we liked the symbolism of Canada and Alaska sharing a border across Mount St. Elias. My story is just one of many connections between Canada and Alaska, so thank you, Senator Begich, for sponsoring this resolution, and to you, members of this committee, for hearing it today.
All right. Thank you very much for that testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. Mathias? All right. Seeing none. Do you have any wrap-up comments you'd like to make, Senator Begich?
Just this, Senator Begich, for the record. Thank you very much for considering this resolution, and I sure hope we can get this moved and passed over the next few days. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We look forward to working with you to amend the resolution to make the update that was referenced earlier. Amendments for SJR 15 are due on Tuesday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. Thank you very much. All right, next up, we're going to go to a second hearing on Senate Bill 9, which is the Title IV update. We first heard Senate Bill 9 on Friday, February 11th, and we heard from several stakeholders that have been involved in the coalition behind this legislation, as well as the bill sponsor. The stakeholders are with us today, as well as the bill sponsor. Amendments were due yesterday, February 15th at 3 p.m., and we received six amendments, which we will consider this afternoon. Available for further questions are Senator Muchiki and his aide, Conrad Jackson, Tiffany Hall with Recover Alaska is here in the room, Sarah Oates with CHAR is here via teleconference, Lee Ellis with the Alaska Brewers Guild is here via teleconference, as is Anna Brawley, consultant with Agnew Beck, who's been working on the Title IV rewrite. We also have Glenn Klinkhart, who is the AMCO director, on the phone for questions for SB 9. Are there any questions about the process today before we open up public testimony? All right, seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and open up public testimony at this time. And we're going to start with Sherry Stead from Homer. Ms. Stead. And I'm going to ask testifiers if you could limit your testimony to 3 minutes. All right, go ahead.
My name is Sherry Stead. Our family owns Grace Ridge Brewing in Homer. Alaska has great craft beer. Locals love going to tap rooms to try their new beers. Tourists love going to our tap rooms and drinking our beer made locally. What has allowed Alaska to have a thriving craft beer industry? What has brought Alaska a new economic growth of $330 million per year? What has created 2,000 new jobs across Alaska? The current state of Alaska licenses one brewery with adjacent tap room per 3,000 population has allowed this growth. To me, legislating out new business growth and opportunities that are currently available within the state of Alaska's manufacturing and adjacent taproom licenses to strictly benefit current breweries and other established alcohol serving businesses is unfair and unethical. I'm asking the House to make and pass an amendment to SB 9 that keeps the current manufacturing and taproom licenses the same as they currently are at one per 3,000 population. I am asking you to keep it fair and ethical. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Jed Wade in Wasilla, Alaska. Mr. Wade, are you there? You might be on mute, Mr. Wade.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Jed Wade, and I'm an owner of Bear Paw River Brewing Company in Wasilla, Alaska. Thank you to Senator Muchiki for your sponsorship of this bill and to the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify on the record on behalf of Bear Paw River Brewing Company in support of SB 9. This bill would create new opportunities for us to grow our business here in the Massey Valley, and it would allow us to create more jobs and generate more tax revenue, both for the state of Alaska and the city of Wasilla, where we are currently and continue to invest. From a financial perspective, it is immensely challenging to operate a brewery manufacturing business in Alaska, really anywhere in Alaska, and Alaska's restrictive beer laws only serve to exacerbate these issues. This bill, which creates more avenues with which we can get our products to consumers in our local market, would have an immediate and positive impact on our business. We're supportive of the bill, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Wade. All right, next up, we're going to go to Lance Johnson in Anchorage. Mr. Johnson?
Yes, thank you. For the record, Lance Johnson calling from Nome, 17-year community member. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you, Representatives Von Holtzfields and the members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. From a healthcare perspective and as a healthcare provider, I want to go ahead and share some stats with you in support of Senate Bill 9. I will be sending this in a follow-up email as well. In 2021, 918 unique individuals presented at the North Sound Regional Hospital's emergency department with a substance-related diagnosis. Of those 918, 565 had a primary diagnosis of alcohol abuse. An additional 100 had a secondary alcohol-related diagnosis, and 72 had a tertiary diagnosis. In 2021 as well, the Nome Volunteer Ambulance Department serviced 616 calls, with 424 of them involving substances, mostly alcohol. That's an astounding 68.8% of all calls. And it was 27,984 hours of response time just for those related calls. The Nome Police Department also reported last year that 3,394 alcohol-related calls and that they responded to, which is 73% of all arrests being alcohol-related, 73%. The ambulance department has 7 regular first responders, and the police department has 10 officers to respond to all these calls. 90% of the inmates at Nome's halfway house in the jail are serving time for substance-related crimes, the majority of which are from alcohol use or misuse. There are 128 beds at the jail at $168.74 per inmate per day, and 50 beds at the halfway house at $117 a day. At 90% of the cost of incarceration for substance-related crimes, that comes to $9,004,587 per year. It's telling also that in a recent survey that 177 inmates answered the following question: what worries do you have about returning to the community with alcohol and drinking as a top concern? In Nome, there are 2 shelters, a day shelter and a nighttime shelter. 465 unique individuals have been served since 2019 by the day shelter. And last year, over 125 unique individuals with 4,576 bed nights recorded used the nighttime shelter. Most of the guests are moving between both of those shelters, and nearly 100% of the guests at each shelter claim homelessness and alcohol misuse. With alcohol abuse and misuse an ongoing recidivistic concern taxing emergency resources, the correctional system, and family systems, the state of Alaska must consider alcohol-related concerns and their related impact on the health care crises they are. If there's an unlimited amount of alcohol outlets, licensed stores, bars, and restaurants allowed and weekly regulated, the staggering numbers I just presented are going to skyrocket with increased crime, homelessness, and death, and emergency resources further stressed in an already overburdened system. And by the way, late last fall, the small 9-aisle local car store received a license and is now selling spirits 3 blocks from Front Street, which currently has 7 bars, 1 liquor store, and 3 licensed restaurants within less than a 4-block strip.
Mm. Mr. Johnson,
Michael is a costly
can you wrap
one.
Up
we must strengthen
money?
Our alcohol laws and limit outlet density so the people of Alaska and their communities can thrive. Please pass Senate Bill 9 and push forward a healthier Alaska. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. It's good to hear your voice again today. Next up, we're going to go to Mike Healy in Skagway. Mr. Healy?
Oh, yes. Hi. This is Mike Healy with the Skagway Brewing Company. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about this matter. I've been following SB9 or its earlier forms for many, many years right now. We are a brew pub, and there's not a lot of brew pub licenses in the state, but we are one. And right now, I cannot self-distribute my beer. So to get into some of the accounts around town, that extra distribution fee just really puts us out of the market. I mean, I'm one of the accounts that we have a little bit of a beer at, but I'd like a lot more. I look at their tap handles, and it's all Seattle-based breweries. If I can get rid of that distribution fee, we can have an Alaskan product in that bar. Furthermore, I have two other restaurants besides our main brew pub. For me to get beer to my own restaurants, I have to go through a distributor who isn't even in Skagway. I deliver the beer, I pick up the kegs, I do everything, minus them filling out a piece of paperwork from outside of Skagway. That also, again, just adds a great deal of cost, unnecessary cost, in my opinion, to operating. So I really encourage you to pass along this bill. For us small operators, our costs are large, our margins are thin, and we need every little bit we can be of help we can get. And furthermore, let's keep money in the state of Alaska instead of sending it down to Washington. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for that testimony. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Jack Manning in Juneau on the telephone.
Yes. Yes. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the time. This is Jack Manning. I'm from Juneau, and I'm calling in support of Senate Bill 9. Been a lot of work from various stakeholders for many years, and I think a pretty good piece of legislation has been put together. I own a package store, Duck Creek Market, out in the valley, and there are some things in this bill for package store owners like myself, some limited tasting and a chance to get into some internet sales. As with many other license types, this bill promotes more business opportunities in the state of Alaska for all license types. Anyhow, I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 9. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony. Next up, we're going to go to Beverly Schoonover in Juneau. Are you online?
Hi there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go ahead with your testimony.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Sponholz and members of the committee. This is Beverly Schoonover, Executive Director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Board. Our statewide advisory boards are tasked with evaluating state and federal laws concerning alcohol, mental health, and substance misuse. Our board supports the provisions in SB 9 that reduce the harm caused by alcohol misuse and underage drinking. There is a difference between alcohol use and alcohol misuse. Alcohol misuse is when you drink in a way that brings harm to yourself or to others. Unfortunately, alcohol misuse is present in every Alaskan community, and it impacts our families and relationships, our health and wellness, our public safety, and it also impacts our economy. According to the Alaska Mental Health Trust, the cost of alcohol misuse in Alaska in 2018 was $2.4 billion. That figure includes loss of productivity, traffic collisions, criminal justice and protective service interventions, and impacts to health and healthcare. Liquor licensing plays a critical role in reducing the social and economic impacts of alcohol misuse by regulating the number of alcohol outlets in a community and regulating the sale of alcohol to minors. Other key provisions in SB 9 include a new penalty structure for both licensees and servers who serve alcohol to minors. This provision ensures that licensees are notified about underage drinking violations on their premises and makes them accountable for their servers' conduct. Statewide keg registration requirements will hold adults accountable if they provide alcohol to underage parties. Regulating internet sales of alcohol will require carriers to develop alcohol delivery policies to reduce underage access. Requiring all servers at permanent events be trained to check IDs and recognize signs of severe alcohol impairment is an important public safety measure for Alaska's community events and fundraising activities. These provisions are all important public health and safety measures which will further protect Alaskan youth and our communities from the harm of alcohol misuse. Thank you so much for this opportunity to support SB 9. Thank you to Senator Bachicki for his leadership on this effort, and thank you, committee members, for your consideration.
All right. Thank you very much for that testimony. And Ms. Schoonover, if you could email in your testimony, we can make sure that we forward that on to the clerk for recording purposes. Next, we're going to go to Jeff Jesse in Anchorage.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Jeff Jesse, former Dean of the College of Health and former CEO of the Mental Health Trust Authority, and I'm speaking today as an individual. A decade ago, when I was the CEO of the Mental Health Trust Authority, it came to our attention that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board was making some decisions that seemed questionable in terms of their applicability to the current statutes at the time. As we looked into this, we realized that they were doing their best to deal with an antiquated statutory framework that neither served the public nor the industry well. Bob Klein, who was the chair of the board at the time, and I co-chaired a convening, which over the next several years involved well over 100 individuals and thousands of hours trying to find common cause to reform the alcohol beverage control statutory framework. What we knew is we could probably knock each other off the play if one side or the other sought to overreach and secure a bill which only served their interest. And you know, a funny thing happens when you get together and you actually talk to people, you find the relationship built into an ability to find compromise. And that has happened over the years. And I'm pleased to say that with Senator Maticki's occasional mediation and refereeing, that coalition has stayed together over all these years and are now presenting a united front. You know, yes, if I had my druthers, would I want to make some changes to this legislation? Well, absolutely. But it has been forged out of a spirit of compromise, and I believe that it is a huge opportunity for the legislature to enact a major piece of legislation which will be, I think, really appreciated by the community. I urge you to push back on deal breaker amendments, and let's get her done. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your testimony today, Mr. Jesse. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Sarah Clark in Anchorage. Ms. Clark?
Hi. Thank you. This is Sarah Clark. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and I work for VOA Alaska. And as a behavioral health provider for youth and young adults here in the state, we see the really devastating impacts of alcohol misuse on children, families, and communities every single day. This impact of alcohol misuse has also been really well documented in our state. In 2019, 9 out of 10 leading causes of death in Alaska were associated with substance misuse, including suicide and homicide. Mm-hmm. Alcohol misuse also significantly contributes to deaths from motor vehicle crashes and hospitalizations. And many youth in our state are experiencing substance use disorders and still lack access to the support they need for healing and treatment. The costs and harms associated with youth alcohol misuse are preventable if we can find ways to build communities that nurture their health and development. And this builds an opportunity to prevent the negative impacts of alcohol misuse by limiting access to youth. Multiple pieces of this bill will protect public health, particularly maintaining regulation of outlet density. And this protection is more important than ever as youth are experiencing more mental health problems during the pandemic. And in 2020, almost 1 in 3 adults reported they were drinking more. While it is an honor to walk with youth while they recover from the pain of substance use disorders, we know we can do more for our young people. And how we build our communities will shape the culture and choices of our youth. And this is a great opportunity to protect their health and wellness. Thank you so much for taking up this bill and for allowing me to share today.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony today, Ms. Clark. And thanks all for all that you do to help our young people recover. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Robin Menard in the Matsu Valley with the Matsu Health Foundation.
Hello there, committee co-chairs, Fields and Sponholes, members of the committee. My name is Robin Menard, and I serve as Chief Communications Officer for the Matsu Health Foundation. We share ownership in Matsu Regional Medical Center and invest our share of the profits back into the community to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans living in the Matsu. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in strong support of SB 9 today. I'm here because it is well past time for Alaska to update its alcohol laws. We have been working hard with many partners for more than 10 years on this legislation. It's quite remarkable that organizations as diverse as health and the alcohol industry have been able to come together, but we have, and SB 9 represents compromises that are good for all Alaskans. As many of you may know, research and data are core to the work of the foundation. And year after year, we hear the same story. Alcohol and substance misuse are ranked by the community as the most critical health issue in MATSU. Our local police chiefs tell us their number one challenge in the field every single day is alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. At our local emergency department, alcohol-related disorders are the number one cause for behavioral health admission. Alcohol is a major factor in many serious crimes committed in Alaska, including domestic violence and child maltreatment. More than 40% of the arrests in Alaska involve alcohol or other substances, and 60% of Alaskans report being negatively affected by someone else's drinking. We've engaged in many strategies to reduce the harm of alcohol misuse, from preventing underage drinking to promoting resilient youth, families, and communities. Another strategy is this bill, SB9. We believe it will promote responsible alcohol use by adults, reduce underage consumption, and support better enforcement of Alaska's alcohol laws. And while our interest is primarily public health, it's well worth noting that this bill also has many benefits for local businesses, something we also care about because a sound economy is an important aspect of a healthy community. That said, it is absolutely critical to regulate outlet density. Greater density of alcohol retailers is correlated with higher crime rates. This impact to public safety is detrimental to all communities, and even more so in remote areas like MATSU, where there's limited Alaska State Trooper coverage. Thank you again for taking the time to hear this bill today. We respectfully ask that you move it forward for the benefit of all Alaskans.
All right. Thanks very much for that testimony, Ms. Menard. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Anna Fisk in Anchorage with Brown Jug. Ms. Fisk?
Hello. Thank you for having me. My name is Anna Fisk. I'm the Vice President of Liquor Stores USA North, DBA Brown Jug. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Started as a family-owned business in the mid-1930s, Brown Jug is now Alaska's largest chain of package stores and was acquired by the Afognak Commercial Group in 2020. Since acquiring Brown Jug a year and a half ago, Afognak has endeavored to be responsible community members in the areas in which we operate. We were proud to have donated $2 million to Covenant House last year, in addition to the $150,000 raised by Brown Jug for a variety of nonprofits in Anchorage, including Food Bank, ASPCA, and the Sea Life Center. Brown Jug most recently completed a fundraiser for a $15,000 donation to Dollars for Dogs, which will fund a new police dog for the Anchorage Police Department. We have also made major investments in renovating and updating our stores here in Alaska. On the operational side, we installed patron scan systems in four stores in 2021. Patron scan is an exterior mounted ID scanner, which keeps the front entrance to a store locked until a valid ID is scanned. This has reduced crime in those stores by 92% and has prevented underage, expired, or fake IDs from being used to enter our locations. While the Afognak Commercial Group just became involved in this industry less than 2 years ago, we see a growing concern with untaxed and largely unstate regulated internet sales coming into our state. Through an unforeseen and growing loophole, these growing out-of-state online sellers are not subject to our state's alcohol excise tax, and state regulators like AMCO cannot track how much of out-of-state alcohol is ordered through them each year. These untaxed and largely untracked out-of-state online sellers are not making any capital investments in our state. They are not investing in state-of-the-art systems like Patron Scan, and they are not making donations to community organizations like Covenant House or to support APD's canine program. We appreciate the legislature's consideration of SB 9, and we strongly support its passage to address the internet loophole through Section 13 of the bill and to more broadly update Alaska's alcohol statutes. Brown Jug looks forward to continuing to work with the legislature and local leaders in finding policy solutions that positively impact our communities. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next up in public testimony is Darwin Bewer. Mr. Bewer, please proceed.
Yes, you hear me now?
Yes, please go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you for the time. I'm in favor. I've owned Darwin's Dairy for 41 years now, since 1981. I'm a small bar down in downtown Anchorage.
I've been the sole owner and operator of that bar for those 41 years. I was chairman of the board of Alaska Char when this, with the SB9, it's been many different names, but the stakeholders, I want to point out just how difficult a problem it was. Because all of these stakeholders had to be folded in and compromised. Alaska Char, of course, brewers, package stores, wineries, distillers, law enforcement, public health, and even distributors. Because there's also federal laws that have to be upheld. And the compromise in these is so, it was so difficult that that is why it took 10 years to put all together. When this group, over the years, devised this bill, they were looking forward, we were looking forward to what would happen in the next 30 years, not just today, but for 30 years from now, as best as we could guess. And that's why there's some issues in this bill that a lot of people may not agree with. But if in the next year, if this bill is passed with these five of these amendments, the sixth amendment, I'm not sure what it is, but these amendments are small corrections that need to be made, and Sarah Oates will explain those, and I think a lot of the legislatures will hear about it. All of these stakeholders, I mean, this is a difficult process. And if this bill passes, then next year or the years, if there's any glaring errors, which is, who knows, probably could happen, that they could be handled separately. So I'm totally in favor of this bill. It's the compromises that you've already heard how this bill affects certain people, businesses, and it's really a necessary passage, because the Title IV as it exists right now is a real mess. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Buehr. Next up, we are going to go to Paul Thomas in Juneau. Mr. Thomas?
Yep. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you. I'd like to offer my support for SB9, amended with the amendments coming up.
Mr. Thomas, can you introduce yourself formally for the record?
I'm sorry. Paul Thomas. I'm a liquor store owner here in Juneau, Alaska. I have Alaska Cash Liquor.
Great. Go ahead with your testimony.
We in the industry need this bill now more than ever. Passing this bill close to its original language will give the industry the stability and possibility for growth, something that has been missing for many years now. While work has been going on to get to the compromises you see in SB9 now. Compromises that have been made by all stakeholders from all the different factors over many, many years. With the passing of this bill, the industry will be able to gain the stability it needs, improving the licensing process, gaining the understanding of clear and concise penalty system. Now, given the brutality of COVID on our industry more than ever, we need the provisions agreed to by the stakeholders over the last 11 years and incorporated in this bill. I want to support SB9. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Short and sweet there. All right. Next up, we're going to go to Jeannie Riley in Anchorage. Ms. Riley?
This is Jeannie Riley. I own Riley's Irish Pub in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been in the industry since 1975 and an owner since 2005. I am in favor of the original SB9. There was many hours spent writing, debating, arguing, and yes, compromising on this lengthy task. Please do not change or add things that weren't written into the original document. The people involved with writing this are either in our industry or involved in our industry. And when I say involved, I mean the police, social services, and all of that. The bill speaks for all of us as written. Thank you, and I support SB9.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony there. Next up, we're going to go to Casey Adderhold in Homer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Casey Adderhold.
I was born, raised, and I'm a resident of Homer, Alaska. Today, I am representing myself, and I am here to give testimony encouraging the House Committee to add an amendment to Senate Bill 9 to keep the current manufacturing and taproom licensing limits in place at 1 per 3,000 in population. Senate Bill 9 would impose an incompatible limit of 1 per 12,000 in population, an abrupt change from the 1 per 3,000 in population for licenses currently in place. In my hometown of Homer, that would prevent future industry growth and would unfairly target prospective new brewers with dreams to set up their own businesses in this and other communities in Alaska. I would gladly welcome new breweries and taprooms to open in our town as they provide a safe and thriving environment to gather for socializing, arts, and community activities, not just during the busy tourist season for our visitors, but also year-round for us residents. As a frequent consumer of the beverages as well as the vibrant atmosphere of our local breweries and taprooms, I appreciate the language Senate Bill 9 that would extend business hours to 10 p.m. and would allow 4 live entertainment events per year. These are improvements that are a long time coming to these over-regulated and tightly constrained businesses. Again, I respectfully encourage the addition of an amendment that would keep the current taproom license limits in place at 1 per 3,000 and keep the extension of business hours and allowance for live events. Thank you for your time and consideration of this testimony.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony today, Ms. Adderhold. Next up, we're going to go to Michael Cervantes in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Michael Cervantes. I am the operating owner of The Banks Ale House in Fairbanks, Alaska. As a beverage dispensary license holder, I am testifying in support of SB 9 today. SB 9 has a tremendous amount of benefits that the committee has heard or will hear throughout today's public testimony. I am asking the House Labor and Commerce Committee to please pass SB 9 to allow its continued movement forward through the legislation to the final goal of becoming law. This bill has 10 plus years in the making, many stakeholders input, and it is time for us to go ahead and act, and there is no better time than now. I thank the committee and the Madam Chairwoman for their time and support in moving this forward to the next committee to become law later this year. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for that testimony. Next up, we're going to go to Jack Lau in Anchorage.
This is Jack Lau, a lifelong Alaskan and co-founder of Double Shovel Cider Company in Anchorage. Grateful to have the opportunity to participate in the creation of this bill through participation in the steering committee. We strongly support SB 9. This bill is good for Double Shovel and it's really good for our industry. It's extremely important to us. It opens significant opportunities to grow our business, create new products, and employ more Alaskans. It would have positive immediate impact to our business. As a small craft manufacturer, the points in this bill that would significantly help us is it removes overbearing regulations on tasting rooms and is in line with what other states have. And those other states have a thriving craft beverage manufacturing business and interstate distribution. The later hours of the tap room are critical for us to generate cash flow and grow, pay for equipment. It creates a craft industry that better meets the needs of both locals and tourists. And it ends unfair trade practices that are a significant barrier to entry for small manufacturers. It creates opportunities for the tap room to have entertainment by permit. At Double Shovel, we'll use any positive impact to grow the business with the goal of distributing outside the state and bringing more money into the state, which also includes more tax revenue for the state. Again, we strongly support it, and thank you for hearing my testimony.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony today. Next up, we're going to go to Jerome Hertel with Palmer with the Alaska State Fair.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerome Hertel, the CEO of the Alaska State Fair. I'm calling today in support of Senate Bill 9 and a fair license that provides a clear definition of what an annual fair is and provides the fair the ability to serve alcohol during the annual fair as well as during interim events. A license that allows us to operate as we have responsibly for the past 39 years. The fair is host to over 70 events each year. for the community, and many of these events are provided with alcohol service. The loss of alcohol service for these interned events would have a devastating impact. It would mean a loss of revenue and facility rental income, a revenue stream that we have come to rely on heavily to survive and prosper. We support Senate Bill 9, and we support a fair license that gives us the ability to serve alcohol not only during the annual fair and during the interim events. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony today. Next up, we're going to go to Katie Baldwin-Johnson with the Mental Health Trust Authority.
Hi, thank you. Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Katie Baldwin-Johnson, and I'm here today representing the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, testifying today in support of SB 9. This bill contains provisions that will directly impact the health and wellness of Alaskans, and more specifically, beneficiaries of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Beneficiaries of the trust include Alaskans who experience substance use disorders, mental illness, developmental disabilities, Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, and traumatic brain injuries. While beneficiaries experience substance use disorders can be explicitly linked to alcohol misuse, we know that alcohol misuse can have negative health impacts on all of our beneficiary groups and all Alaskans. The bill before you represents the efforts of stakeholders of a stakeholder-driven process, one that has garnered the unprecedented support of the public health community and the industry. The trust was one of the original sponsors of the efforts to revisit the alcohol statute, and over many years, the trust has remained an active partner in Title IV reform efforts, along with a multitude of other partners representing industry, public health, and public safety. We're proud of the collaborative work amongst these stakeholders to arrive at the compromise that is SB 9. And we've been involved in these conversations because we recognize that updates to Title IV could have a positive impact on our beneficiaries. We also know that in addition to health-related impacts, alcohol misuse comes with a significant economic cost. Recent McDowell report that the trust commissioned, the cost of alcohol and Alaskan misuse in 2018 was $2.4 billion. That estimated $2.4 billion accounts for costs associated with healthcare, criminal justice system, lost or reduced workplace productivity, public assistance, and social services, as well as a range of other impacts related to substance misuse. What is harder to put a dollar amount on is the significant impacts to quality of life that alcohol misuse has not only impacts on those who are misusing it, but their families, their friends, and their communities around them. 69% of Alaskans report being negatively affected by someone else's drinking. Another 2018 study from our state epidemiologist cites that almost half of Alaska's children in out-of-home placements were connected to homes with parental alcohol abuse. And between 2006 and 2016, roughly 18% of all criminal justice convictions were attributed to alcohol. This bill creates a rational regulatory structure for our state licensing system, controls online alcohol sales, limits youth access to alcohol, and promotes responsible alcohol use. It does these things while simultaneously supporting a fair business environment. For these reasons, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is in support of this bill. The trust is opposed to any changes to the bill that would allow for an unlimited number of outlets selling alcohol. Limited outlet density is a proven strategy in reducing alcohol misuse, and a significant increase of outlets selling alcohol will impact public health. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks very much for your testimony today, Ms. Baldwin-Johnson. Next up, we're going to go to Jonathan Galen in Anchorage.
Hello, Jonathan Galen in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for the forum and the ability to testify. I'm testifying for myself and as an individual that's been in the middle tier, a wholesaler for decades. And also, I'm a licensed beverage consultant, one of the few in the state. Generally, I support Senate Bill 9. However, with caveats, I find there should be an exception to the aspect on the amount of new licensees for this type of license for tap rooms. Currently, one brewery tap room for every 3,000 people. I find this very problematic. This is a limited entry situation. This is not akin to fishing, commercial fishing permits. We have entrepreneurs. It's a growing industry. If you're going to change the limit, make it higher, one per, I believe, 12,000 people, I find that very problematic. If you took a look at the ADN newspaper this morning, there was an excellent article referencing Cordova. Two licensees wanted the license. They flipped a coin. That is not the spirit of entrepreneurialism. So that is my main problem with this particular aspect of the bill. And the article went on to state that there's only 8 cities or boroughs that have more than 12,000 people. This will stifle free enterprise. You could also have some affluent individuals from outside in the lower 48 with plenty of cash that will bid up these permits. This is what's happened with the beverage dispensary license in Alaska. I have clients that have spent anywhere from $180,000 to an excess of $350,000 some years ago for a beverage dispensary license. So I appreciate the forum, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for that testimony. It looks like we've got one person signed up for in-person testimony here in the room. That concludes everybody interested in testifying online. So if Mr. Trevor Storrs can make his way up to the front for his testimony.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on SB 9. As the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, we are in support of this bill. All children should be safe and healthy, and a value we all share. Alcohol plays a major role in many of the social, behavioral, and physical issues our communities are addressing every day, including child abuse and neglect. Prevention is a key tool we can utilize to help address current trends. One of the components of prevention is to minimize alcohol consumption with our youth. Research shows when consumption is reduced in our youth, negative impacts later in life are also reduced. This bill does 3 core things to help reduce underage drinking. It requires keg registration that will hold adults who supply minors with alcohol accountable. Regulates internet sales and establishes licensee liabilities for selling to minors. In addition to the need to curb underage drinking, we know that over 80% of substantiated child abuse and neglect cases involve substance misuse, usually alcohol, which has a huge expense to our state. SB 9 has been a collective process that has included individuals from multiple sectors, including government, nonprofits, and the alcohol industry. This collaborative approach helps ensure a strong, fair, and comprehensive approach. We urge you to support this bill, SB 9. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And is there anybody else in the room who wishes to testify today? All right. Come on forward.
Yeah, my name is Jason Davis. Sorry for not signing up. Our flight was late getting in today.
No problem.
I'm the owner of a winery in Homer, Alaska. A small meadery that opened a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I agree with the guy from Anchorage. I think that this draft legislation overall is a good thing. It really tightens up the hodgepodge of regulations that we have. But I really think that changing the population limits for the manufacturers and for the tap rooms of breweries and wineries is not the way we should be going in our state. We manufacturers are creating new products here in Alaska. At my operation, I buy honey from local beekeepers. I buy fruits and berries from local foragers and from farmers. And the idea that a city, under this new regulation, a city of 20,000 people would be allowed 1 brewery and 1 meadery, I don't think it makes any sense. And I hope you guys will be able to amend the legislation, before you move it out of this committee. Just to keep, you know, the limitations that we have of 1 per 3,000 are pretty restrictive already. In our little town, we're already maxed out with 2 breweries, but we could conceivably have another one in the next few years. But under this legislation, that would never happen as far as I can tell. So I just hope that you would find it in you to amend this to keep the current population limits. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Is there anybody else in the room that'd like to testify? All right. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony now. All right. As I mentioned earlier, I want to thank everybody for testifying. That was pretty robust public testimony with some pretty strong themes there. And I appreciate the time it takes to sit on the line and wait for sometimes an hour and a half to testify, and appreciate everybody being so succinct in their testimony as well. As I mentioned earlier, we do have 6 amendments to Senate Bill 9 to consider. As a reminder, we have available for questions Glenn Klinkhart, who's the AMCO director. We have Senator Michicki and Conrad Jackson, the bill sponsor and staff, Tiffany Hall with Recover Alaska, Sarah Oates with CHAR, Lee Ellis with the Alaska Brewers Guild, and they're part of the coalition, that a stakeholder coalition, which has helped to craft and support the passage of Senate Bill 9 over the past 10 years. And then, of course, we have Anna Brawley, who is a consultant with Agnew Beck, who has worked on some of the technical details associated with the bill. So we've got a lot of lifelines and resources to bring in into the discussion today. We're going to go ahead and start with amendment number 1. I'm going to move amendment number 1.
Object.
All right. So this is a technical amendment to make sure that the intent of the sponsor and stakeholders is being met by the legislation. This was actually identified by a member of the other body, I believe, on the Senate floor. The amendment removes ambiguity about 10 p.m. being a hard closing time for brewery, winery, and distillery retail licenses by clarifying that patrons cannot enter nor remain on premises after 10 p.m. Representative Fields, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
All right. Are there any remaining objections?
I would like
to. You have objection?
Yes.
Okay. Representative McCarty?
So, let me have a second here to take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
So since this is covering so many different licenses, mm-hmm. can we have someone from the sponsor bill explain this particular category here and what
sure.
it entails?
All right. Why don't you come forward, Senator Michicki and Mr. Jackson, if you'd like.
Thank you, Co-Chair Sponholz and Co-Chair Fields, and through the Chair, Senator McCarty. This is simply a cleanup for the intent of the bill. So the bill was intended on part of, so you'll hear a lot about the 1 in 3,000 to the 1 in 12,000. And what that allowed was a substantial amount of other business models and activities, right? As well as the 4 events a year, the fact that you can now have fun and breweries and stuff like that. But part of the deal in tasting rooms, it also has unlimited breweries. Breweries are no longer 1 in 3,000, neither are distilleries, neither are wineries. They are unlimited. It's just the tasting rooms that are limited. But along with that came the ability, instead of having a soft close at 8 p.m., they will now have a hard close. We've talked about that all through the record. And to her credit, Senator Costello noticed that the language wasn't clear. It says you can't enter a tasting room after 10 p.m. But what it didn't say is you couldn't remain on. So you might have the same problem that you have today. The problem you have today is you can get your last 3 beers at 8 p.m. and then sit there all night. So this is not only for the breweries for a couple hours of extra operation, but it also allows them to go home to their families at 10 p.m. This simply clarifies that it is a hard close.
All right.
Okay, I remove my objection.
You remove your, are there any remaining objection to amendment number 1? All right, seeing none, amendment number 1 is passed. I move amendment number 2.
Okay.
All right, so amendment number 2 is also a cleanup issue for the fair that clarifies that the definition of the definition of the annual fair. It puts the former definition agreed on by the Alaska State Fair along with other stakeholders back into statute. Do you maintain your objection, Representative Fields?
I do not maintain an objection.
Is there any other objection to amendment number two?
I have an objection.
Okay.
So the question in this here, and we had the person from the fair testify, that it appears that this is reflecting only for the annual fair activities. And I'm concerned that that person said that there were 70 other fair rental or rental activities of the fairgrounds during the year. Can I get clarification to what?
Can we have the bill sponsor come up and address the question? This is a very technical bill, and I want to make sure that we have the expert address it.
That is an excellent question through the chair, Senator.
Representative McCarty often comes up with excellent questions. So
yes, what this says, so essentially what happened in Senate Judiciary is it made it so there can be you and I can create a Ken and Peter's Brewfest. We would have the same rights as the annual fair. And we can be open every night to sell beer and wine without a license other than the fair license. So what the fair has agreed to, obviously, is that this represents what occurs at an annual fair. That's why the annual fair definition was important. So that, I'm sorry, but you and I can't do our brew fest. But this supports something like the Palmer Fairgrounds. And what it says is this, and there'll be a following amendment that meets the needs of the current needs of the Palmer Fair and other similar fairs. It says this, it defines the fair as the annual gathering. So you can't create this other thing. And it will, in the future, you'll see that there's a limit to how many events. We worked with Jerome to make sure that they were adequately supported. And this is what everyone has agreed to make sure that the Palmer Fair can continue doing what they've been doing for years.
Okay.
Any further follow-up questions?
No, I remove my objection. Removed.
All right. Objection is withdrawn. Is there any other objection to adopting amendment number two? You have a question?
I object for the purposes of asking the sponsor.
Go ahead. Clarifying question.
And you may have caught this already. I just noticed in amendment two, and looking ahead to amendment three, it appears we're adding two new subsections, both labeled D. And I wonder if you would like this particular one in Amendment 2 to be labeled E.
We will we'll have in our motion the ability for Ledge Legal to make conforming changes in order to make sure that the bill flows. But either of them could be adopted or not at this point in time.
Very good. Thank you. I removed my objection.
All right. Thanks. Are there any other objections to adopting Amendment Number 2? All right. Seeing none, Amendment Number 2 is adopted. I move amendment number three.
Object.
All right. So amendment number three sets the number of events that are included in the fair license in addition to the annual fair at 30 events, such as weddings and fundraisers. So those are events outside of the annual fair itself. Stakeholders, including representatives from the Alaska State Fair, came together to figure out this number, which will allow for current annual events and accommodate future growth. This amendment doesn't change the opportunity for the fair to petition for additional nonprofit permits, should they like. Do you maintain your objection, Representative Field?
No, I do not.
All right. Is there any other objections to adopting amendment number three? Representative McCarty?
And just the testimony of the individual saying that there are 70 events that happen throughout the year, and I didn't quite hear whether there were, 60 of them that did not involve alcohol or 60 of them that did involve. And so that puts it over the 30, which that's concerned there. And if the fair is gaining revenue to keep the operations of the fair for, different things, are we taking away that revenue source by limiting it just 30 if they're receiving more requests?
All right. Do you want to address this question, Senator Michicki?
Certainly I can. Some of you may remember a bill previously. This isn't like the floor, so I can talk about previous bills. We did a Save the Fair bill. I'm sorry, Representative McCarty through the chair. We did a Save the Fair bill a few years back. I am a huge fair supporter. I've been involved with the 4-H for many years. I think they're very important. In fact, we do an annual pilgrimage to Palmer with many families and have a really good time every year. The fair is very important to me. We tried to meet the needs of their alcohol-related events at the fair. If they were to ever go over 30, which I don't believe has occurred, alcohol-related events at the fair, there's also nonprofit event permits that they can apply for, and there are caterers' permits, and they can bring another licensee in if they ran into that trouble. I don't think they will. Last year was a very heavy year for them because of COVID. A lot of the Anchorage folks were having events out in the freedom of the valley, and there was a lot more events out there than there typically is, but I think this is the right number. They've agreed to that number. If it ends up being a problem someday in the future, we can rediscuss it, but I think it meets their needs.
Okay, thank you.
Do you maintain your objection?
No, I remove it.
All right. Is there any remaining objection to adopting amendment number 3? All right. Seeing none, amendment number 3 is adopted.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll move amendment number 4.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. This amendment addresses direct shipment of wine, beer, and liquor. This amendment is a proposal of the coalition that has worked on this bill for many years, and what this amendment does is reduce the volume of alcohol that can be shipped. I think it maintains a volume that is high enough to support our small businesses, and it's important to note that one of the things this bill does is allow direct shipment of wine, beer, and liquor, distilled spirits. Under current law, you can only direct ship wine, so this amendment does support some of our local breweries and distilleries. However, when you look at our underlying law, I think it's fair to say it's anachronistic and allows a very high volume of alcohol to be shipped. And in the interest of maintaining this balance of supporting small businesses, but also public health, this amendment would reduce the overall volume of alcohol that can still be shipped. You can see the section of the bill this amendment would modify on page 31. And I think reducing this still will allow consumers to buy a meaningful amount of alcohol and support small businesses. As you heard referenced in public testimony, this is important because we would prefer, I think, as a state, to have transparency around direct shipment of alcohol rather than a total lack of transparency with online shipments from the lower 48, which is the current situation. Happy to answer any questions, and thanks for considering.
All right. I will remove my objection. Is there any remaining objection to adopting amendment number 4?
So I'm going to object.
Sure. Go ahead, Rep. McCarty.
That I have, and certainly is, you're hearing from testimony of high-risk use of alcohol versus low-risk use of alcohol. And the question in this here, and looking at the bill, has, in the case of line 18, deleting the 9 liters to 4.5 liters per year, that I'm trying to picture in my mind a liter, which is a little bit more than a bottle of wine. That's like 750 milliliters. And so that, and the concern of different people and testifying saying that it could put a crimp on this industry. And so this is like putting a crimp on how much the industry can distribute out by dropping it in half. So I'm concerned that, one, we don't want to have, let me back up here. One is that we want to encourage low-risk drinking if people are drinking. But this is almost like a prohibition attempt here. Instead, just to leave it at the 9 and such. So that's my concern.
If I could respond,
Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative McCarty. I'm definitely not a prohibitionist and enjoy many Alaska locally produced products, distilled spirits, beer, and wine. Fully want to support those local businesses. Again, on page 31, you'll see that right now you can buy up to 54 liters of wine per person per year. Note that, let's say it's a household of 2 adults, that would be 109 liters, or that would be, as you note, somewhere in the neighborhood of 130 bottles of wine. I think that's probably more than most couples would need to order through direct shipment, considering they're also allowed to buy locally. So again, this is just trying to strike the right balance between public health and accessibility by consumers. It's definitely not prohibitionist, but I would actually turn to either the bill sponsor or maybe one of the members of the coalition to just talk about how this is consistent with what the coalition has worked to develop with the bill sponsor over the last few years, and just confirm that it's consistent with the sponsor and the coalition's intent. Thank you.
All right. Senator Michiki.
So this is, I think it might be the opposite of the way that it looks, and I'll tell you why. This is a new amendment. So previously you're only allowed to do wine, and it was an enormous amount of wine. The amendment was to allow spirits and beer to be shipped as well. And this bill's like, you remember when we were kids, you make a paper airplane, or we'd have those, a better example of those balsa wood ones with the weight, and you'd put the weight in the wrong place and the thing would crash, and you'd spend all afternoon getting the weight to be in the right place. Still only sail like 12 feet, but it was much better than the instantaneous circular crash to the ground, right? So when this amendment was made, because some people say, hey, Amalga gin, this isn't product placement, but Amalga gin and Juneau is pretty good. I leave the legislature and I go home and I might want a bottle periodically. And right now it was unfair to Alaska businesses. They couldn't ship in state. So we said, okay, we went back to the team and we said, if you guys want to have the ability to ship in state, what does that look like? And all of the folks that first get very excited and upset that have given an enormous amount of compromise over the years, say, we're done. We're done. And we say, you know, what if the amounts that you can ship, which were huge quantities before of wine, were reduced to a reasonable amount to a typical family? How does that look? And we started talking about that. And when you talked about the other parts of the bill, which I know you're not discussing right now, but the direct shipment, the tracking, the pieces we have in the bill to try to identify bootleggers and put them out of business forever. It really is a fair amount for family usage, even some, it's much more than my family would ever consume. But I think it's the right mix. I think it promotes Alaska businesses being able to ship, but certainly not in quantities that would support a bootlegging operation in rural Alaska. I think it's a good amendment, and I support it.
All right, thank you. And I'd like to also go to Sarah Oates with Alaska Char. Ms. Oates, could you address the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As noted by the bill sponsor, Senator Michiki, current statute doesn't allow for in-state manufacturers to ship at all. Whereas there are no limitations whatsoever and no regulation of out-of-state manufacturers and suppliers from shipping direct to consumer here in Alaska. So the language that was in the original version of this bill, as Senator Michiki noted, would have only allowed for wineries to do direct shipment. That was amended in Senate Finance to allow for breweries and distilleries to also do direct shipment. And then also, as noted by Senator Michiki, we had some discussion with our constituents on how much the direct shipment by manufacturers could potentially impact local retailers. And there was a lot of discussion on the public health side of things about possible public health implications. You heard testimony from Brown Jug today about the security that takes place and procedures that they have in place to ensure that alcohol does not fall into the hands of underage persons or people who should not be purchasing alcohol. And so collectively, the stakeholders who have been largely involved in this process from the beginning thought that these numbers, these reduced numbers were reasonable.
All right.
Okay.
Representative McCarty, do you maintain your objection?
remove my objection.
All right, great. Are there any remaining objections to adopting amendment number 4? All right, seeing none, amendment number 4 is adopted. Representative Fields.
I move amendment number 5.
And I will object for the purposes of explanation.
Thank you. This is a technical amendment in the process of moving this bill through the process. The stakeholders identified that unintentionally there was some language that would create a legal gray area where potentially some existing bar owners and full tab operators might not be able to operate in the way they currently do. I think one of the principles of the bill has been to support our longstanding local businesses. So this is a technical change. It just clarifies the bar owners that have been selling full tabs doing that. We're not trying to monkey with gaming in the state of Alaska with this bill. So with that, I might just ask the bill sponsor to confirm that this is in fact consistent with the direction of the bill and is a technical cleanup amendment. Thank you.
Senator Michicki, would you like to comment?
Certainly, but I'm going to introduce my chief of staff, Chair Sponholz.
Go ahead.
Because he's the expert in this particular area.
All right, Mr. Jackson.
Good afternoon, Chair Sponholz and members of the committee. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Michicki. As Representative Field said, the goal of this bill is not to poke anyone in the eye, to use a term here. Currently, folks with gaming permits have vendors outside of their establishments who are selling pull tabs. Currently, those are sold in establishments that are only accessible to persons 21 years of age and older. The concern with the drafting that is being addressed by this amendment, we are still allowing folks with a restaurant or eating place licenses to sell pull tabs, but again, still in the areas that are accessible by people 21 years and older. We're not suggesting that they sell pull tabs at a restaurant table. That's not allowed now. It's not going to be allowed. This just makes sure we do not limit small businesses who act as vendors for pull tabs for our nonprofits to continue doing what they do, making little money from that, and nonprofits who sell those rippies to the vendors to continue what they do, which is make a little money from that enterprise.
Representative McCarty?
No. Very good. Thank
you. All right. Do you remove your objection? All right.
I didn't object.
You didn't object? Maybe it was my objection. I need to remove my objection at this point in time. All right. We got a little out of order there. So are there any remaining objections to the adoption of Amendment number 5? All right. Seeing none, Amendment number 5 is adopted. Representative Fields.
I move Amendment number 6.
I'll object for the purposes of explanation.
Thanks. Amendment number 6 returns to the intent of stakeholders and the bill sponsor in drafting this bill and sticking with population limits on the number of alcohol serving establishments. As I think committee members probably understand from this point, I strongly support the local businesses in my district that serve wine, beer, and distilled spirits at bars and breweries. But I also think it's important that this bill not allow a concentration of alcohol serving establishments that has some of the pernicious public health impacts we heard about from Lance Johnson with Norton Sound Health Corporation. It's really important to strike that public health balance, and this amendment ensures that we're adhering to that balance, which was struck by this very large stakeholder group. So with that, I actually want to turn to one of the representatives of the Coalition of Public Health and Industry Stakeholders to explain why this balance is so important and why this amendment is important. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go on that point. I'm going to go to, I guess, Lee Ellis this time. Mr. Ellis?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is Lee Ellis for the record.
Can you address Amendment number 6?
Yes. So, again, you know, you've heard a lot today about the delicate balance that we have struck as a group. And, you know, of course, we are always supportive of increasing commerce industry, but we always have to be cautious about the realities of the public health aspect of what we do. The joke I like to make is that we are the only industry that has been banned by a constitutional amendment of the United States. So we try to be thoughtful about what can happen. I think that Amendment 6 is critical to maintain balance. I think that the original intent of the amendment, that changed our agreement, brought a lot of concerns and issues all across the industry and from public health. And I would say that our industry in particular is highly concerned about changing statutory standards for where we can operate and how we operate. And I think that Amendment 6 brings it back to what it should be and what the hard work of all the stakeholders produced. And I think it still leaves plenty of room for growth and modernization in our industry.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Ellis. I think I wanted to make sure that we had balance and representation of the stakeholder group. And so now I'm going to ask Ms. Tiffany Hall with Recover Alaska to come up and address the amendment as well.
Thanks very much, Madam Chair. Tiffany Hall, Executive Director of Recover Alaska. Thanks for hearing the bill and all of this thoughtful commentary. This amendment is definitely the most critical one to public health and safety representatives from the bill. And without including this amendment, it would make this bill go from an overall win for public health and safety to being very actively detrimental to health and safety in Alaska. It would be a giant step backwards for Alaska if we do not pass this amendment. Regulating alcohol outlets is one of the absolute best public health strategies that exists in order to reduce related harms of alcohol, proven to reduce crime, violence, and disease, as well as motor vehicle incidents. There are multiple different studies from around the country and around the world that show this to be true. I'm happy to send ample documentation, but basically just to say this amendment would help us to continue to control alcohol. Alcohol is not a regular commodity. It's not like coffee or sugar. It's not even like fisheries. Alcohol comes with a $2.4 billion price tag to our state. It's killing Alaskans at a rate well over twice as high as the rest of the nation, and we absolutely can't treat it like bread at the corner store.
All right. Thank you very much for that thoughtful commentary. And I maybe want to ask Senator Michicki, give you the opportunity if you'd like to comment on this and how this relates to the overall structure of the Senate Bill 9.
Yes, thank you, Chair Sponholz. It's hard to say Chair Sponholz. We're not programmed to say that.
You could just say Chair.
Okay, Chair.
Mm-hmm. I just find the Madam Chairwoman thing just a lot of reminding me of my, you know, who I am.
Right, it bothers me too. I live with five of them. So this bill is an interesting bill. And so I'm a kind of small government letting the free market fly kind of guy. And that's what we've tried to do in this bill. But think about this group we brought together. 10 years ago, we brought a group of people together that may have liked each other previously, but they definitely didn't hang out. They're from opposite ends. And I keep saying this because we should focus on what this group has been able to do as a legislature. They came together, absolutely different interests, every interest, not special interests, but every interest associated with this industry, and came up with some really good ideas and built some really healthy relationships and came up with a balance. And in that balance, being an ex-mayor, I like to push as much to the local munis for their control as possible. We actually came up with this unique plan on additional licensing. We're starting with restaurant and eating place licenses where you can go to the board. What started off as every 10 years, went to every 5 years, and now annually you can go to the board and say, I've got a family in my city of Soldotna that has this incredible restaurant idea. Our population grows from 6,000 to 50,000 in the summer. We'd like for them to get a restaurant eating place license and possibly one additional one because we'd like to draw some other entity to our community. We'll go to the board and they'll approve it or not approve it and explain why. We think this is a way to prove that municipalities can handle some additional licensing. What the amendment did was say that anyone in the states, whether they're an organized municipality with the wherewithal and a police force to handle a facility like this, can apply for any type of license, anywhere, at any time, in any number. You're not going to get there by trying to do things in one fell swoop. I think this going back to the way it was will demonstrate that municipalities can work with the industry, work with public safety, and be successful for additional licensing. Going all out is simply not supported. It takes the weight on that airplane and puts it on one wing at the very end, and that spiral is what happens with this amendment. So with the previous amendment, this amendment sets it back to where it was. It's a great balance. It gives municipalities that role in moving forward and managing some of their own licensing, and it can demonstrate that this can work in the future.
All right, thank you. And with that, I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any remaining objection to adopting Amendment Number 6?
So I object. And it's still not clear to me as I look at the language is referring back to the beginning of the amendment and what it's can we have a brief at ease and I'll just
brief at ease. All right, we're going to go back on the record, and we have a question from Representative McCarty about the bill structure. And so I want to invite either Anna Brawley or the bill sponsor up to address the question, Representative McCarty.
So the question is on the amendment, is inserting in restaurant and eating places. On page 73, lines 17 and 18, it's referring to the very language that is asked to insert, which seems to be redundant in that piece there. So can you explain that, why we have to insert these things in again?
I can. Can you give me the page number that you're talking about where it's redundant, please?
It's page 73 and appears lines 17 and 18.
That, if I may, through the chair, uh-huh. Representative McCarty, that's not a part of the amendment. The amendment is on page 73, line 31. It was the things that were removed for the new application process for municipalities. So they added the word additional. I'm sorry. Let me find it. Page 73, line 31. the section you're looking at is not a part of what was changed. So when I say about the amendment, and I keep saying that I understand the reason for the amendment, I get it. I was a mayor. It was just a step too far for the supporters of the bill. It opened it up to all license types. So this is reinserting just the restaurant and eating place. Page 73, line 31.
And section 53.
I see that.
Does that address your question?
Yeah, I see where I'm not seeing that part. So I was looking at section 52, mm-hmm. and we're talking about section 53. And so I see the reason for putting that in that amendment piece there.
Okay. So you maintain your objection?
So no, I removed the objection.
All right. Is there any other remaining objection to adopting amendment number 6? All right. Seeing none, amendment number 6 has been adopted. Wow. So that brings us to final consideration of Senate Bill 9. Are there any final comments from members of the committee? Representative Kaufman.
Let me get all geared up
here. Do it.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to say I respect the tremendous piece of work. A lot of adaptive compromise that many stakeholders have engaged in for a long time to try and move this along. So I'm happy to support this in its as amended condition. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other comments? Representative McCarty.
Appreciate this coming before. I've talked to quite a few people in the industry, asking the thoughts, and there's strong support for it. Also, thank you for this reading material on the plane, both ways.
124 pages will do that. Yeah. All right. Any additional comments? All right. I want to thank Senator Michiki and his staff, Conrad Jackson, for your years of work on this important piece of legislation. I just want to thank Anna Brawley with Agnew Beck for her work on the legislation. She did a great job of communicating it to the committee. And most importantly, I want to thank the coalition of stakeholders who has worked very hard together to craft a compromise piece of legislation which modernizes our alcohol laws in the state of Alaska, which creates equity amongst licensees and protects public health at the same time. I particularly want to call out Tiffany Hall with Recover Alaska, Sarah Oates with CHAR, and Lee Ellis with the Alaska Brewers Guild. I want to thank everybody who called and testified today. I myself am related to two former alcohol license holders. My stepfather had a winery license and, you know, founded and sold a meadery in Alaska. My father owned a liquor license and bar out in the Mattsu Valley. And I don't drink alcohol. So I sort of, you know, see this from all sides. We do have a kegerator in my garage, so we're not an abstinence-only household. You're welcome to come on over and have a beer if you'd like. And so I really appreciate the immense amount of compromise and work that went into doing this. We really do need to update our alcohol laws in the state of Alaska to support innovation and business in a sector of the economy that's been really wonderful, and also to protect public health across the state. So thanks to everybody who's done this remarkable work. Co-Chair Fields, do you have a motion?
Chair Sponholz, I move Senate Bill 9, Work Order 32-LS014/G from committee as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection? All right. Seeing none, Senate Bill 9 passes from committee. I do want to give Ledge Legal the authority as well to make any conforming changes. I think Representative Snyder noticed that there's two amendments that have the same letter, and I know that Ledge Legal will make sure that they dot the I's and cross the T's on that. I want to remind everybody that amendments for Senate Joint Resolution 15 are due Tuesday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. That represents all wraps up our business for today. We are not going to meet on Friday or Monday. We're going to let people enjoy the President's Day weekend. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, February 23rd at 3:15 p.m. in Barnes Room 124. Thanks again to our secretary today, Leah Fraser, and our LAO moderator, Leo Striedel. And this meeting of the House Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 5:07.